You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Mama's Talkin' Loud. Jess and I love bringing these stories to you, amplifying the journey of the working artist mom, supporting the struggle, and striving to change the social safety net. But we need your help. If you haven't already, we would so appreciate if you would follow, rate, and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. This is the way we can continue to raise awareness and change the narrative. And if you want more insight into our world, please follow us on Instagram at Mamas Talkin' Loud, on Twitter at Mamas Talkin' Pod, and on our website, www.mamastalkinloud.com. Trigger warning. The following episode contains sensitive content and may be upsetting for some of our listeners. Please listen with care.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. Today's guest earned a Tony Award for her performance as Angelica Schuyler in Hamilton, has an incredibly full television and film resume, including the starring role in the powerful The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, and she can currently be seen on the new series Girls 5 Eva as Wiki Roy.
This mama joins us today to share how prioritizing life and keeping the faith buoyed her on the emotional and very difficult journey to motherhood and her two beautiful children. Proof that however your babies are meant to come to you, they will. Here's our conversation with Renee Elise Goldsberry.
Welcome, Renee. We are so excited that you are here.
Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm excited. Thanks, guys. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. The first question we ask all of our guests is to tell us about your kids, because it's not something we talk about a lot in our industry.
Oh, I have two kids, Benjamin and Brielle. They are 12 and 8, which is strange to say out loud. And they're phenomenal and you know, crazy and funny and brilliant and just really the joy in my life.
Yeah. 12, you're getting close to that teenage years.
Yeah. Dangerously. This morning when I woke my son up, I told him to stand up so I could see if he had, you know, gotten taller than me. I figure by the end of the summer, but I still have a slight edge.
Just wait. I'm sure it'll be like over the summer, he'll come back to school and he'll have grown like 3 or 4 inches. My gosh. And you're a tall girl.
I feel shorter. I mean, when your kids get bigger, it's a beautiful thing to watch them grow into their fullness, you know, like, and I don't know that it is diminishing in some way. Mm-hmm. It's a very proud moment. I sometimes try to think about my parents and how it must feel to have, you know, fully functioning adults that, you know, came out of you. Like, that's a strange, strange thing, you know, when they're actually really good at things that are separate than just, you know, things that everybody does, like walk, you know, how right. exciting that was. They're, yeah. you know, the walking and yeah. they said words and all of the things that every, you know, that we think are really huge things and they're relatively normal. But what happens when they actually are really strangely good at something? Like, I'm kind of blown away by, you know, your kids growing into the unique people they're going to be, and, you know, with talents that have nothing to do with you. That's very exciting to me.
Yeah, for sure.
like independence, I feel like. I mean, I have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old, and I'm like, with my 4-year-old right now, I look at him and I'm like, oh, you are becoming you. Like, this is the beginning of you becoming you. And it's a really, it's just fascinating. You were going to say something, Jess.
No, I was just going to say, like, for me, it is interesting because, like, I grew up in a theater family. And so all we did was theater and dance and everything like that. And Elliot, while she's interested in it, she's almost 7, but she is drawn to sports and she loves track and she's really fast. And she's super athletic, which is a completely different world for me.
Yeah.
But I'm excited. I'm like, oh my God, what will that be like to have someone who doesn't do the things I do, you know,
right.
My husband's an actor too. Like, we're all, you know, so I can't wait. It's wild.
It's crazy. And then just being kind of dwarfed is interesting. it's a really fascinating journey. That's never not surprising.
That is the truth. That is very much the mom truth right there. Oh my God.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a whole series on our podcast about the journey to motherhood, and we've talked to a bunch of different actresses about their journey, Stephanie J. Block, Lisa Gaida, lots of different ways in which people become mothers, right? And you have a really interesting path that took you to motherhood. You struggled a little bit, and then your second child you adopted. Can you talk a little bit, kind of walk us through maybe your decision to start trying to have kids and then how that went for you?
Yeah. Well, I always wanted them. I actually wanted more than I have currently. I guess I thought, when you're in this business, you're trying to figure out how you'll balance the things. And you typically have an idea of how it's going to go. Like, I'm going to have this career, I'm going to get it really established, and then I'm going to have children. And I just sometimes, you know, think that, you know, God hears us making plans and just laughs. And I sometimes actually hate coming up with ideas because I feel like if I come up with it, you know, it means it's not going to happen in that way just because it's less interesting than, you know, something that is, you know, some journey that's, like I said, surprising. I started trying, I think around in my like early 30s to have kids, maybe 32-ish. I'm not really sure. And that really just meant kind of like removing the net, thinking, you know, all of that. You know, that, you know, as soon as I did, I was going to have children, and it didn't. I think maybe about a year in, I started to wonder what's going on. I did actually get pregnant. And I had a miscarriage, my first pregnancy, just right after just towards the end of the first trimester, which I thought was just tremendously traumatic. And I think that's actually very normal. And then my second pregnancy was much more, you know, went much further, and was actually the traumatic miscarriage because I ended up having a second trimester miscarriage that second time. And then, you know, it had just a series of, you know, what they called, you know, miscarriages at different stages of the road. Maybe 5 before my son was born, which was my 6th pregnancy. And in the midst of all of it was, you know, a lot of professional triumphs and opportunities, you know, that kind of were coming up, and me always trying to balance along the way, having children. And the beauty of it for me is that it became very clear to me, because, you know, opportunity kept coming through for work. But the challenge was, you know, figuring out how to have a successful pregnancy. And I think it's beautiful when I look back now, because it never is lost on me what was and is the most important to me. And I think that gets confusing. But whatever, you know, whatever seems to come the hardest, we typically sometimes value more. Mm-hmm. I'll speak more about, you know, the journey to both children, but, you know, 12 years into being a mother, when, you know, I'm still working and I'm still having opportunities that, you know, potentially can take me far away from these children I worked so hard for. I'm glad that this journey began with a very clear, just a very clear purpose of, and a very clear awareness that if I had to choose between these two things, there is absolutely no question it would be children. I used to say, if at the end of my life, I could be sitting around a bunch of trophies, you know, Emmys and Tonys and Oscars, or a bunch of ungrateful descendants, I would always pick the latter. You know, it was just very clear to me that, you know, there was that, you know, that's what I really wanted. And so, yeah, so I kept trying, and I tried aggressively. And I think the trying is something, you know, people have different experiences having children, but I think the endurance you have is different. You know, some people, you know, go through one, you know, loss and they're like, I'm out, I'm done. That was too painful. Mm-hmm. For me, the alternative was too painful. So I just kept trying, like, you know, some way or another, this home is going to have children until I feel, my heart feels like, you know, I can paint the picture over the fireplace.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't really paint that picture. I mean, you're going to have to paint it again if you keep having kids. So I was always waiting to when I was ready to like commission the piece of art, you know, that had my family.
Right.
And so, yeah, I had my son, Benjamin. That was my sixth pregnancy. And then after I had Benjamin, I tried, right. I think I stopped breastfeeding relatively early because I wanted to, I already felt like I had waited a long time. And I was unsuccessful. I was even more, my pregnancies were less successful than they had been the first time. And we could not find any like reason, you know, clinically why we were not successful. We couldn't figure it out. The only piece of information we got was some kind of a chromosome similarity between my husband and I. They told us, it's something that they say, that this country, I don't know, it's been a while, but like, they don't even believe it's true in this country. Like I had to go to England and other places to find doctors that would acknowledge the one thing they could maybe find that was a reason for our, you know, our pregnancies not coming to full term. When I was trying to have the second child, I was confused because I didn't want to do anything that risked me physically because I was already a mother. But I also felt very strongly that, my family wasn't finished and I really wanted a sibling for my son. And I ran into a really good friend, Carrie Butler, who you should also have on the show if you haven't yet.
We've asked her a couple of times. It's never been the right time, but hopefully we can get her soon.
She's a part. There are a lot of women that you could have on the show. LaShawn's. There are a lot of women.
We had LaShawn.
Yeah. There are a lot of women along the road, mothers and some women who are not mothers who are, you know, get, you know, huge praise for their participation in my journey to being a mother. And those two are a few of them. But yeah, Carrie Butler and I went out to lunch one day. I had just taken a Christmas picture with my son and my New York lonely boy. If you've seen Girls Five Eva, you'll know what that is.
I just started it this morning.
Okay. I had a New York lonely boy at the time, which is my one child and as a New Yorker. And we did a Christmas photo shoot. And then I went across the street and met Carrie for lunch. And in about 10 minutes, I was bawling my eyes out because I just knew that my next child, I was going to go down the road that they had gone on two times to adopt from Ethiopia. And a year later, I brought home my daughter, Brielle, which was another miracle. Both of my children are miracles for a lot of reasons that I won't take you through on this podcast, because I know you want to talk about a lot of different things. But they're both absolute miracles. Their journey here was fraught and challenging, and in the end, victorious.
That's incredible. It's you know, I was struck by you speaking to the losses. I can only imagine how difficult and traumatic that was at the time. But what has stuck with me is you speaking to how clear it made your focus and your priority. And I think so many people, you know, so many people in this industry struggle with that. You know, I mean, we hear girls who are in college or who are in programs who are thinking, I'll never be able to have a baby. You know, I'll never be able to have children. How am I going to be an actor and be in this business and have children? And that's a huge reason why we started this podcast. It's just to tell the stories and amplify the fact that it can happen. And I think that for you to have such clarity with regard to that part of your life, that's incredible. I mean, I know for me, I was sort of the like, oh, well, we'll try. And if we don't, I guess it's, you know, maybe it's not for us. And whereas you were set, you knew. And Kara has said that too about herself. She knew she wanted two children.
Yeah.
And to have that so that you could keep that, your eye on that final wish and dream that you had and the hope and keep going. And while all these other things are happening, you know, we hold all these the accolades and the ups in our careers, we hold them, you know, in such high regard to a certain degree. But at the end of the day, like you said, if you were going to be surrounded by trophies or ungrateful descendants, you know, you want the latter. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's a challenging, kind of proposition. If you believe you have to choose, which I don't believe, I think, I don't think you have to choose, but, you know, for us, you know, when you're, you know, before I was playing with baby dolls, I had a brush and I was singing in the mirror. Like they're both dreams that meant everything to me and were huge parts of my identity. So to be clear, first of all, to think that you have to choose is traumatic. Yeah. And, but to know that even if at the end you don't have to choose, which I said, I don't believe, you absolutely have to prioritize, and you have to risk. And I think what I tell people, and it's not just women, it's not just mamas, no, it's potential papas as well. What I tell them all the time is that it is counterintuitive, but it is absolutely true that babies bring blessings, and you can't assume that you have to have everything together before you have children. It's a very good idea to have a good partner. I'll tell you that. if you're gonna pick something to get lined up before you have children, it would be the father/ partner. But in terms of my career is in the perfect place, my body's in the perfect place, my finances are in the perfect place, I live in the perfect place, all that stuff, that is, I think, a lie from the devil. I think that is a lie from the pit of hell, and it stops, it puts so many people in a situation where they wait so long that the size of the family, or they start making, you know, the dream is somehow or another compromised. Yeah. Because in my life, as an example, you know, the more dependence I got, the more successful I became.
I find that fascinating. I've always said that in my life as well, when I started to make decisions for my life above my career, things just really clicked in a really strange way. When I started to make decisions that were forming the life that I wanted, looking toward the future, everything just kind of like started to fall into place in a really wonderful way, in the way that I envisioned. The thing that I am struck by is that you were enduring all this loss on your journey to having a baby, but and I know this from a little bit of research on when you were on Busy Phillips podcast, but your star was on the rise. You were going through all these incredible successes in your career. And I just can't imagine what that balance was, the emotional weight that you were carrying of trying to become pregnant, and also the emotional commitment it takes to create new roles and be in new works. And how did you balance that? Was one kind of an escape from the other, or was it, I don't know, how was that cohesive in your life?
Well, it's interesting, because I, you know, had a lot of guilt, you know, all of those pregnancies are really kind of tied, those early miscarriages and whatever are, by early, I mean, like, you know, back in the day, early miscarriages, they were always like related to a job. You know what I mean? I was always somewhere at a job when, you know, something went wrong or went right, you know? And, so I, you know, I mark them by what job I was doing. You know, when I was the first pregnancy, I was on One Life to Live. And I remember having, you know, the one day I actually walked off the set and couldn't shoot was the day, you know, that I was actually hemorrhaging because of a miscarriage. You know what I'm saying? So I remember that moment. I remember my second pregnancy. I was in One Life to Live and I was in Shakespeare in the Park. And I, you know, and it was a beautiful time because I was very successfully pregnant for a very long time. And we were putting plants in front of me on TV. And, you know, we were growing my dresses. Then I left Two Gentlemen of Verona in the park at Shakespeare in the Park and went to do The Color Purple. And they knew that I was, you know, when they offered me that job, I had to disclose to them I'm 3 months pregnant. And they wanted me to do it anyway. And they're like, we'll just grow dresses. And if you could just do it for a couple months. I was like, okay. I just to affirm the point that you just made, I think there's something about physics and the energy of you putting your focus somewhere else that leaves a void for things to come to you. Which is why I say it might be counterintuitive, but it absolutely works. Like, I'm sitting there telling these people that are trying to give me a job of an original Broadway show, thank you so much. But, you know, tell Alice Walker I said thank you, but I can't do it because I'm 3 months pregnant. And they're like, oh no, can you just do it for a couple months? We'll just build you dresses that grow. So it was a very beautiful, I think, you know, there's something about, you know, like you said, you know, I was showing up for everything. But I did have some guilt when I did that, when I lost that baby there, because I was so busy. I think the night I lost that baby, I think I did I probably shot One Life to Live in the morning. I did The Color Purple that night for a show. There was a thing called Broadway Meets Country.
Oh yeah. There
was this thing where they took Broadway stars and country music stars and you got to do a show, like a big, like whatever, kind of a gala kind of cabaret. And we did it, at Lincoln Center that night after I sang my country music song with, you know, I think, you know, Islands in the Stream or whatever the hell we sang. That's the night I had this miscarriage. And so I was so busy. There was, you know, everybody used to say to me, Renee, you know, just lay down, you know, have a baby, relax, lay down. And when they said it, it was like out of love, but it was, I always heard it as an indictment. Like, oh, maybe I had lost these babies because I was moving so fast. But the irony is actually, I think the only reason why I had a successful pregnancy at all was because I was moving so fast. It's hard to explain, but if you believe the theory of what's actually wrong with me, my body actually needed to be that busy, to be as successful as it was, which is why my son, this pregnancy that I had was so successful, was when I was in Rent. I was literally hanging upside down on the rafters with tight blue pants on, right, and like high, you know, those high platform boots when that pregnancy implanted and was a successful 9-month pregnancy. So, you know, it's just crazy, but so much of my story is just really counterintuitive. And I do believe that the sense of entitlement that I felt like I could go for both of these things, I was going to prioritize having children, but I could actually go for both of these things, is the reason that I have children at all. And the reason why, you know, we're still here fighting this battle of, am I going to go do the show that takes me away from here at night sometimes?
Yeah. I mean, it's just incredible for me to wrap my mind around all of these things that you were going through and how you're talking about that actually was creating the space to allow the babies to come through.
Yeah. Physiologically allow the babies to come through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, everybody has a different story. There are some women that probably have to go on bed rest for whatever reason. What was going on with an embryo being successfully implanted for me was that it needed to, you know, my body was attacking an embryo. That's what a miscarriage really is. Somehow or another, the embryo is compromised before it implants. And when I was that tired, that exhausted, that stressed out, the embryo, there was other things for my immune system to do, and the embryo got through. It's a strange, strange thing.
No, but the universe kept throwing those opportunities at you. They're like, I'm going to keep you busy. Don't worry. We're going to keep you really busy.
I mean, it's just incredible. I just also am thinking about you in those blue pants, like just Mimi. How long did you go in that? Like, I can't imagine, you know, just would you light my candle? And you're like, you know, with your belly or whatever.
But. Oh, well, so actually, no, so I wasn't. I took a pregnancy test the day after Rent closed.
Oh.
You know, I mean, I don't know how much detail we're going into here, but we all know what implantation bleeding is, right?
Yeah. Right.
I remember we filmed the closing of Rent. The closing performance of Rent, we were literally brought in to just do. I only did Rent for 3 months, but we were hired to be in the closing company of Rent and to be filmed on Broadway. It was a celebration of the end, which was so brilliant. And before, I remember, like right before I went down to the stage to shoot it, I thought I had started my period. I just remember, so I was not happy. I remember being like, really, God? Like, I'm about to go film this thing. I thought I had started a period, but the beauty was it was actually implantation bleeding. So the day after Rent closed, I took a pregnancy test, and I just had the greatest secret in the world for about 9 months.
I just burst into tears over it, to be honest. Like, that's just so magical with God and the universe being like, now you can. This is ending, and now you can.
And what's beautiful for me is when I look at that performance, You know, when I look at that, it's because it's saved. You know, I, it's like, it's not like a baby's, it's literally like a moment of implant. Like it's that embryo for once after all those times when I'm hanging upside down on film is actually burrowing in the way that it actually made it. It's a miracle. It's an absolute miracle.
That really
and my
is.
Daughter is a miracle too. You know, like my daughter, I went to Ethiopia to bring my daughter home, you know, like out of some, you know, movie, like some, you know, Sally Fields movie or something. And I thought to myself, you know, that's it. You know, this is it. I've been through it and I finally have this blessing. I finally have this family. I'm done. I'm going to sit in this house and I'm going to knit things and I'm going to celebrate that I have these two children here and this family is so beautiful and so perfect. And it's such a gift from God while they were calling me, and harassing me to listen to the demo of Satisfied, you know? And I was like, no, I finally got this thing. I finally got what I want. And, fortunately I was open-minded when I heard the demo and decided that, you know, we could bond as a family while I was in Hamilton.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I mean, it's incredible how the universe takes care of God, the universe, you know, the spiritual, It's like, it truly is that I believe that it's like we've talked about, once you have a baby and you walk into an audition room, like your priority is no longer, the weight of being in that room is not the same as it was possibly back in the day before so you had a child, you know? And so like there you were in Africa and you were getting Brielle and you were getting ready to bring her home. And Lynn's like, listen,
yes, yes.
You know what I mean? And
he,
you're like,
he didn't know who I was. He wasn't like, listen. But definitely the cast, thank God for Bernie Telsey and Oscar from the public. Yeah. You know, for sure. They absolutely were like, you know, somebody's got to be able to wrap this, Renee, please. We think you can do it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, my husband says, you know, and this is something that was really healing to me while I was trying to figure out how to have the second child, you know, the beauty of having children is not that you don't go through the same lows. It's just that the valleys should be more shallow, right? Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of children is that you really can't, you shouldn't wallow. Or you really can't, we can't wallow as long as we would because there's a thing there that's like, feed me, mm-hmm. change me, you know? And so that definitely helps me even now is, you know, we still, you know, there are still battles that we go through, but you know, the valleys are a little bit more shallow with children because they're pretty loud and they're pretty demanding and they kind of force us to take these things a little less seriously and focus on what's really important.
And I also think contribute to the quality of our work too, at the end of the
100%.
Day. 100%. I mean, the value of that experience and what it gives us and the depth of our experience and what we can portray, you know, you just can't underestimate that. I feel like, I mean, my ability, we talk about this all the time, but my ability to cry on a dime is like so it had never been before. Like, you need me to cry? I got this. It is not an issue.
Hilarious.
And it's genuine. Like it's not, you know, there's no faking. Going
oh, you want
on
pain?
There.
I got pain.
I'll show you.
What, one eye or two?
Are we going like full blown, like heaving, sobbing? Cause I can give you that too.
We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I love that they just wanted you so much. They're like, it's fine. We're going to make it work. But that is just, so many people in our industry are so afraid to even say that they're pregnant, to like let that cat out of the bag because of, I mean, not for nothing, but people have been taken out of the game by it. People have said like, I'm not going to hire you then, you know? And I just think it's amazing that they fought for you. You literally were saying like, no, I can't do
this.
Like,
well, because no, I had done the first 3 months of Shakespeare. I was, first of all, there's double duty. Double duty is, you know, the soap opera during the, you know, which is the 5, 6 a.m. hours and then going to the theater at night.
I don't know how, Renee, that is
It was
insane.
So hard.
Yeah.
So, and I had fibroids. That was one of the big issues. I had multiple issues in my pregnancy situation. One of them was fibroids. The other one was, I think I learned later, a blood clotting disorder. But once we got those things straightened out, then we still had an issue. There was multiple things going on. So I had really terrible fibroids in that first pregnancy. So when I was doing double duty and the exhaustion of being in my first trimester and then going to the park at night to do this amazing show, this two gents with like a huge afro and these like really beautifully engineered, you know, boobs in this costume with this great, you know, rock music. You know, it was just a wonderful, it was really a career defining moment for me to be in that particular production. But I wasn't telling anybody that I was pregnant. And it was first trimester pregnant. And so I was exhausted and I was nauseous and I was excited. And when the show ended, I got like these really great reviews, which is, I think, why The Color Purple wanted me, because I had this darling New York Times review. Yeah. And I think they really just, and the part they offered me to play was Nettie, which was not like a huge role in The Color Purple, but they thought if she's a review darling, maybe it'll help us get some good reviews. I think maybe I'm, you know, diminishing my actual audition and value, but there were reasons why I think they took the risk. But what's most important to say, two things. First of all, I got really good advice when I was there, because I was like, should I do a show in my second trimester? And a friend told me, I want you to know that in your first trimester, you are depleted. It's like you're divided by two, because your body is building a human being. But in your second trimester, it's like you're superwoman. That being is fully formed. It's just growing. So you're like times two. You have the power of two. You're going to feel like you can fly. And she was totally right. In the second trimester, I mean, I've never been pregnant with a girl, so maybe it's different if you guys have daughters that you had to build in your body. And maybe that's more exhausting. But for my son, I did in my second trimester feel like superwoman. I did feel like I could take over the world. It was not physically challenging in that way. I think
it's a good time to do 10 out of 12s. There you
go. It's a good time to do 10 out of 12s. If someone will expand your dresses, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, not so bad at all. I will say I have a girl and a boy, and it was actually more tiring for me to build my boy than it was.
Really?
But I already had the girl when I was pregnant with the boy. So maybe that has something.
Who knows? Yeah.
And you were still doing 8 shows a week, Kara. You had a toddler and you were doing 8 shows a week.
So. Right. But to that point, I was going to say you were already prepared by doing that, because you were doing double duty on TV and theater, not double duty of like doing a workshop of a show during a day and then doing the show at night. You had 5 a.m., 6 a.m. calls.
It was exhausting.
So you were really well prepared for having a baby.
That's a good point.
I mean, like, you were good to go to like have that baby, get up early, and sleep, then go do your show. What is sleep? Who needs it?
Yeah, I think that's true. That's true. But to answer your question about telling people what you're going through, I mean, maybe I lost opportunities. Maybe some people did it anyway. I really believe strongly that your journey is your journey, and the people that are meant to, you know, bless you along the way are not going to be able to help it. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's what my experience is. If I was supposed to do a job, there was nothing that was going to stop me. Even if the person themselves was like, why am I hiring her? This is crazy. And if I was not supposed to do a job, it doesn't matter how available, how few children I had, how much time I had, how talented I thought I was. It was not for me.
Yeah.
I love the stories. I'm doing a documentary right now with Kelly O'Hara about this very thing, about the journey of trying to have children and raise children while you're on Broadway. And I remember seeing Kelly before I think she did. She was doing what play was she doing? She was doing a play where she was pregnant. You remember which one it was?
We had her on the podcast. She was doing, it was an off Broadway.
So
oh,
good.
Gosh. So
far from
good.
Heaven. Far from heaven.
Far from heaven.
Far from yes, heaven. Far from I saw heaven. Her in that. I didn't know her yet, but I saw her in that. I saw Audra in what was it? Shuffle Along.
Shuffle Along.
Yeah, I love seeing a pregnant woman. I love seeing a pregnant woman on stage killing it. There's nothing more powerful. There's nothing more powerful. And the people that hire women that are pregnant, and there are a lot of them, there are people that don't, but there are people that do. They are out there. Mm-hmm. And they're amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's happening more and more. It's becoming more of the norm than the exception. And we just got to keep talking about it and amplifying it, showing it as much as we can. Because it is such a powerful visual statement, right?
Yeah.
To see a woman doing what she is intended to do. Beyond
her screen. Most beautiful.
Yeah.
I just am thinking back to Kara, you doing Boyfriend's Back when you were Boyfriend's like 22 weeks pregnant with her big old belly, just in the sequins and Jersey Boys, just like swinging it around. That was amazing. And then she would say like the people in the front row, she would see like people, right?
Pointing
at her like, pointing. Oh, look at her. She's pregnant.
It's a beautiful thing because I do believe that we need to, you know, we need to flaunt it. Like friends of mine, you know, there's different camps of whether or not to share your children on social media. And that's a personal decision that everyone has to go for. But I think most often the harder the struggle to have the children, the more you're going to see their kids on social media, I'm going to tell you, you know, and yeah. And for me, one of the reasons my journey was, you know, public, you know, a lot of those miscarriages, you know, the big one was, you know, right after they had told the world that I was pregnant was the day that I lost my baby, my second trimester, loss. And I used to be like, why did this happen to me? Now I'm pretty private when it comes to those kinds of things, but I'm so grateful that it happened because, you know, that's the reason we are so much more valuable, you know, in our struggles than we are in our triumphs. I mean, I always say, you know, no one needs to, you know, see you to figure out how to win a Tony. You know what I mean? I think they can figure it out. You know, they're going to call your name. I'm going to go up there. I'm probably going to cry. You know, that's not something you necessarily need an example for, but you definitely need to know that I know somebody that survived this loss. I know somebody that did that. How did they do it? What did she do? That actually matters. And there's just not really enough interviews about that. And I remember I was on a lot of shows with women, like on The Good Wife, Juliana Margulies. I've been on a lot of shows with a woman that was like the number one on the call sheet, who was working 12 hours a day that was trying to raise a child. I remember LaShawn's in The Color Purple, where she had, you know, part of her contract where she had a room upstairs in the theater where her kids could come and play. Now there's a reason that, you know, one of them is a Broadway star. You know what I mean? She was up in that theater. You know, I have a lot of examples of women who, you know, are, you know, doing it all. And, I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it, which makes me believe I can.
Well, you're doing it. You are doing it. And I think to that end, talking about like the loss and the sharing and seeing it, you said this in the beginning of the episode, when you're talking about your losses, is that you made a comment about how first trimester miscarriage, that's pretty common. Now, you know, these are the things like people just don't even know because it's not talked about. You know, there's still sort of the stigma of don't tell anyone until you're out of the first trimester. But if you don't tell, no one knows. And then they feel alone if that happens to them. And
absolutely.
And I think that these conversations need to continue. Absolutely. And keep amplifying it, because it's the loneliness, particularly in this last year or so, I think that people have felt the loss of community and being on their own. I can only imagine if you are someone who is going through a loss in that way and feeling that you're on your own and you had no idea. There's not that much we know about. You know, like you said, you thought you'd go off the pill or whatever, and then you'd like be pregnant, because we think our whole lives, you know, we're like, oh my God, the minute I miss it, it's going
to
happen.
Well, because we're fighting. That's the crazy thing. We're fighting to not get pregnant.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And then we're fighting to get pregnant. And it's a bizarre turnaround.
Yeah, totally. And then you realize like, oh, there's only a few days I can actually get pregnant. Like when you start to really learn the physiological aspects of it all. So I do think, thank you for, you know, for sharing that part of it and part of the journey. And that's why we have these conversations, because people do feel alone. And I think that we need to change the conversation with regard to miscarriage and loss and the journey that it, that the road that it can be, the hard road it can be.
I always tell people, you know, don't assume you're going to have trouble. Just because a lot of people do, and you might hear about that. Don't assume that you're going to have trouble. You know, go into it with a positive attitude. Most likely you won't. But if you do, it is not abnormal. I mean, what's different about the world we live in and compared to our parents is that they just didn't know they were having, or I mean, like, I almost think it's kind of criminal to even call an early miscarriage a miscarriage, as opposed to just a chemical pregnancy or a late, you know, like they just didn't have the information to be mourning the losses of pregnancies that were never going to be viable. Because we just know so much more now about exactly what's going on, and we put a lot of emotion to it, and it's hard to not put emotion to it. So that's one reason to talk about them, is to understand it is very, very, you know, you want the right, you know, you want, you know, when everything is right, it's your child. And until then, you know, it's a stop along the way. And I feel, I think it's important to also say that I talk about this really kind of lightly now, with an intention to share it, but I don't hold pain from even like the most painful moments. I don't hold pain from it, because I know that my family is very specific and was very destined. And if anything had happened differently, it would not be this. I don't think what I have is an accident. I don't think what I have is, you know, somehow or another, some compromise or something different than what it would be. I think this is exactly what it's supposed to be. A really good friend of mine, that's a guy, actually one of the castmates from One Life to Live, told me that he believes the Lord resends souls. So I believe, you know, I don't think that like I missed something I was supposed to have. I believe my children are supposed to be here right now. And I don't believe there's any different parenting that happens, and any different, you know, any different kind of connection between a mother and a child, whether the child came through your body or whether the child came from the other side of the world. It's something that I get to live every day. It's a testimony, and I'm so grateful for it.
I love that thought philosophy. I'm going to take little bits of that for my life too. You know, we become parents in so many different ways and have different experiences. Like, I have a special needs child, and I, you know, there's a lot of questioning that goes on. Like, why is this my journey? And to take comfort in the fact that this is the journey. This is what was meant for me. And this is my family. I can take there's a lot of comfort in that. So thank you for that. I would love to, just before we wrap up, for anybody listening who is considering adoption or something like that, can you talk a little bit more about that process and what advice you might have for it? And then also raising a child that is adopted and a child that's biological, not that anything is different between them, but what kind of conversations you have in your family about that?
Sure. So the adoption process is very, I'll just say, just in general, there are a million ways to have children. And I explored a lot of them. And the only reason why I can't say all of them is because this field changes so fast. You can't even put anything in print about it. Like, the field of fertility, the opportunities to adopt, it fluctuates so greatly all the time. It's hard to follow the path of somebody exactly. You have to find your own path. What you have to follow is the whatever will they had to keep going. That's what you have to follow. You know what I mean? You have to just keep going, in spite of a lot of, I think, pain and frustration. Sometimes you have to keep going, and you have to believe that your victory is there. But in terms of adoption, for me, it was, I found somebody that had just done it in Carrie Butler. So I could follow her exactly before that window closed. But there is domestic adoption, there is international adoption, and that changes all the time. And it depends on where you're doing it. You know, you can adopt through the foster care system, you can adopt privately, you can there are just so many ways to do it. It's hard to get one specific route. I decided to do international adoption because I knew somebody that had just done it. And I felt like You know, having explored the pros and cons, this would be the perfect thing for my family. But I know people who have adopted successfully and have beautiful families through foster care and through private adoption and through going through a lawyer as opposed to an adoption agency. I also know people that have used surrogates to have children. I also know people that have used, you know, every kind of fertility treatment. And I know people that have actually, you know, recognized their motherhood in children that they are actually not legal guardians of, you know? So, and I think all of those roads to motherhood are beautiful and valid. And you know, your second question was, you know, what's the difference? Is there a difference between biological and, you know, the adopted child? And I haven't found it yet. I think the thing that is so starkly different about parenting is that there are two totally different souls with two totally different needs and two totally different strengths. And the challenge that they present is as unique as our signature. And some of that might have to do from their birth story, but probably very little. And I think in my own experience, what children know better than anything is you. They know you better than you know yourself. And I think if we, you know, what I think is important when it comes to having two children, whether they have a different birth story or whether they're just, you know, whatever is different about them, if they're twins even, you know, our ideas about what's different about them are what they have to grapple with. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because they're so aware.
Yeah.
Their survival is being aware of our opinions. And so I think the greatest thing is to always, you know, be fully prayed up and really aware to work on the ideas we have about what kinds of things are going to limit our children. And because they will constantly prove us wrong if we're open-minded about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't see a different difference in parenting my children other than the fact that they are completely different people and challenge me in very different ways. The way they got here is something that we're really proud of and we're always celebrating. The difference in the way they got here is something that we're just really excited about and makes them really special.
I just love it. I just love that, you know, you knew what was meant for you. You knew that this family was meant for you and you didn't stop pursuing it.
Well, let me just say, I didn't know.
When you were in it.
That's what's crazy. And I don't want people to think because I didn't know almost everything. And that's what's so scary, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was going to get. I just knew I just desperately needed to try.
Yeah.
And, and people, I'm not a name and claimer. You know, these people that can like, I'm going to claim this thing. I knew that I couldn't name and I didn't believe that I could, I'm going to have this and I'm going to have that. And I'm just going to keep visualizing it. I'm not good at that. What I know that I'm guaranteed spiritually is peace. So I believed that whatever it was going to be in the end, I was going to have peace about. And that's what I have.
Oh. That's the way to do it. It makes me think of, you know, my husband and I say, you can't miss your destiny. You know, whatever is for you will be for you one way or another. And you have to trust and believe. And you did. And you've got this beautiful family.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah.
And an incredible career to boot, which we didn't even really talk about. I know all the listeners are going to be like, you didn't talk about Hamilton. But that's not what we're here for.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Renee, for joining
us.
It's just we're so happy that you could be here to share with us. And I mean, I think we've all seen you. I mean, how many words do your kids know to Hamilton, Kara? It's like, you know, it's like the things I hear from people. They're like, my kids watch Hamilton so many times. And now we've got Girls 5 Eva with some of our favorite people. So thank you so much for joining us and for taking the time. We appreciate
it. Thanks, guys. This podcast is really, really wonderful. So thank you guys for doing all this work. And for sharing your lives.
Well, thank you. Likewise.
We're celebrating women.
Holla!
Yeah.
Exactly.
Be well.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dory Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.